Hello everyone, my name is Francis Donald and I'd like to welcome you to this ninth session in an ongoing series of webinars on sacred number and geometry. If you'd like to see any of the first eight sessions, they are all available on makara.us, that's makara.us. Thanks to Brett, who is assisting today, along with BL, would you two like to say hi to the folks?
Hello, everybody.
Hi there.
Brett, are you there? So BL will be taking your questions and comments and relaying them to me. If you'd like to ask questions or make any comments during the webinar, please use a headset. If you don't have a headset, there is a text box in the middle of your control panel, and some people have very effectively participated just typing in their comments and questions in the control panel, and you can use it to communicate with BL and I. There's really only a couple of buttons to worry about. The main one by far is the Raise Your Hand button, which is up in the top left of the control panel. And just push it once and your hand will be raised. It's a toggle, so don't push it again if you get impatient, because that lowers your hand. And if you have any other questions about the GoToMeeting interface, just feel free to type them in the text box and BL will get back to you on that. Okay, last month we began looking at the number four, mainly through two concepts. First, the fall of three into four and the subsequent overshadowing of four by three. And secondly, four is the midway point. Both of these concepts function as they do because of the quality of the energy of fourness. But what is this quality? Well, we know that four is related to manifestation and to the form world in general, but why? What is it about the energy of fourness that ties it so closely to the world of form? To get a sense of this energy, let's do a couple of simple visualizations, kind of guided meditations. First, let's imagine that we, as a group, are a point in an equilateral triangle. As we gaze across to the other two points, we realize that, like the fulcrum of a scale, our position is exactly halfway between those two points and is exactly as far from each of the other points as they are from each other. Where each of these other vertices, that's just another name for a point, a group of individuals, as we are, they would experience us as a point of synthesis to what would otherwise for them be a geometrical opposition. For until the third synthesizing point is recognized and realized, the two are caught in polarity, as illustrated by the graphic on the left, and the energy oscillates instead of circulates. But when all three vertices are mutually aware of each other, something extraordinary happens. Each point becomes a synthesizing point for the other two. This triple synthesis conditions what astrologers call a grand trine. It's why it's considered such a propitious element in the astrological charts. And because the perspective of the three points is identical in terms of distance and angle, the quality of their synthesis is also identical, which brings them into a shared experience of unity. Their eye is single, so to speak, for they are the three in one. In fact, this is as close to unity as is possible during any cycle of manifestation, because when the three actually become one point and all difference disappears, time and space are drawn up into the one, and we enter what's called the day be with us. Let's get a reader. Break the ice here. Somebody volunteer. Maybe one of you new students. By the way, in terms of these headsets, they're quite inexpensive these days. You can go on Amazon.com and get a 4-star rated headset for like $10. So don't feel, you know, if your finances are an object in this, don't feel like you can't afford a headset. Okay, could we get a volunteer to start us off with reading? Also, and I encourage you, by the way, to step up to the plate when I call for readers. All of you who have headsets, please plan on reading during this webinar. Okay, BL, do we have anybody?
Yes, we do.
Great.
Go ahead, please, Rosanna.
Hi, Rosanna. You knew probably.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hello?
Can you go ahead and read this comment that you see on your screen?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. The completed chord, the third, the fifth, and seventh within the eternal now carrieth with it the vibration of that which is to be. Cometh the day be with us on the greater cosmic plane. Then life and love and power shew forth as one.
Thank you, Rosanna. Appreciate that. Okay. Now let's imagine ourselves as a point in a square. Very different experience. As before, our point is part of two pairs of opposites, but now there are no points of synthesis because, unlike in the equilateral triangle, we are not directly connected to the point that stands diagonally opposite us. Thus, our experience is dualistic, for we are part of a structure with four pairs of opposites and no points of synthesis. Not, that is, until we add a central point, giving us one of the two orthogonal views of a tetrahedron. Orthogonal just means a flattened or 2D view. Now, if you can see me on your little webcam, I'm now holding up a tetrahedron, and as you can see, the point is facing you, so it looks like the figure on the top right there, right? If I hold it this way, like this, you can see that, were you able to see all the way through the figure, it would look like the square with the X in it on the top left. Is this working, guys, BL or Brett?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, now notice that you're seeing a horizontal line there, right, facing you. If I just turn this straight over, now you're seeing the vertical line. So when you see the two together, that's when you see the square, right? It's actually something like that, but anyway. Whereas this is the what's called an orthogonal or 2D view of the point in the triangle, right, like that. Okay, so... All right. So we're going to be spending some time looking at the tetrahedron, since it embodies the highest potential of the number four and is thus unique among three-dimensional objects. Let's start our study of this figure by following the genesis of a tetrahedron into form. The first figure to issue from the vesica pisces, from which all figures issue, is an equilateral triangle, three from two, right? Two circles, and then those two circles in this particular combination allow one to create the triangle. So from our earthbound perspective, this triangle is a purely conceptual figure representing unity during Manvantaric cycles. That just means cycles of manifestation. when this triangle is mirrored downwards, we have the blueprint for the world of form. Here, this mirroring is depicted as reflection into what is called the Great Waters, which represents the lower quaternary or world of form. This is the realm wherein the second aspect of divinity, the form builders and geometrizers, work. Those of you who are studying Amoria Federation, this is one of the nature, one of the qualities of the second ray. Under their direction, the geometrizers, the Deva Kingdom builds in time and space. Okay, to make this descent into three dimensions geometrically, we first need to extend our triangle downwards. Through the down-pointing triangle, the one becomes two, the blueprint or potential form world. Now, through that same down-pointing triangle, the three becomes four, a prerequisite for entering the form world. Okay, now let's fold this figure. As soon as we make our first fold, our object enters 3D space. Right, the figure up on the upper left is what's called a net. And those little white slivers are glue tabs that allow you to fold the figure as is illustrated on the right side. And the completed result is this figure, which was made just in this way. Okay? So now we have the tetra, which means four, and hedron, which means faced. The tetrahedron, or four-faced one, made up of four equilateral triangles, and the first, simplest, and strongest of all the Platonic solids. Okay, let's back up a moment and look at what just happened, this descent, from a cosmic point of view. Could we get a reader to read this next passage? This is from stanza 2, the stanzas of Zahn, in a treatise on cosmic fire. And that describes the descent into form, very much like we just saw geometrically. Do we have a volunteer?
Yes, we do.
Great.
Go ahead, please, Vera.
Yes, hello. In musical collaboration, they attended to the work. They built in many spheres, beginning with the third. Upon this plane, their work commenced. They built the sheath of Atma and strung it to its primary.
Thank you, Vera, thank you. So you can see here the area that's being discussed is highlighted there in the chart on the left. Many of you are probably quite familiar with this chart. Those of you who aren't, this is discussing that area which is formless, in the formless realms. And it's describing basically the first descent into form. You can see the string that's described here. See where it says, they built the sheath of Atma and strung it to its primary. That dotted line that moves between spiritual will in the middle of the illustration up to the top to will, that's that string. So, Vera, could you keep right on speaking and read this for us as well?
Okay.
Thank you.
Aum, said the Mighty One, let now the work proceed. Let the builders of the air continue with the plan.
Okay, the builders of the air are associated with the Buddhic plane, the fourth plane. So like the tetrahedron, the three falls into four. Okay, please go on. One last reading. Vera, could you read for us?
The Deva Lord and builders upon the plane of air wrought for union, each in his group assigned. The molds grew fast beneath their hands. The sacred plane of juncture, the fourth great plane, became the sphere within the greater circle which marked the goal for man.
Thank you very much, Vera. I appreciate it. So do you see the connection between these two illustrations, which I've overlaid each other? They really are illustrating the same concept, aren't they? One geometrically and the other philosophically. So in the upper three formless levels, you see the upper triangle, right? And then the down-pointing triangle embraces the lower planes, the planes of manifestation. And the stanza that we just read describes this descent in terms of the building divas. Okay. Let's use DK's threefold method of analysis to get to know the tetrahedron a little better. We should be pretty, from those of you who have been coming, should be pretty familiar with this formula by now. We've been using it for a while. So could we get a reader to read this first instruction?
Hands, volunteer.
Somebody jump in, please.
Yes, got it. Go ahead, please, Scott.
Exoterically, this involves study of its form as a whole, of its lines, and therefore of its numerical significance, and also study of its sectional forms, by which I mean its arrangements.
Thank you, and congratulations. You'll know what I'm talking about. Scott's been trying to be a part of the webinar for the last two times, but found himself locked out and finally was able to solve the problem. That's terrific. Okay, so what can we say about the lines, the numerical significance, and the arrangement of the forms that make up this figure, the tetrahedron? At this point, we're not looking for meaning or significance, but rather for a tabulation of this figure's physical attributes. We'll make a list, and we'd love to have you participate. When called on, please briefly describe a single physical attribute. Your observation may seem obvious, like the ones listed here. That's fine. That's, in fact, what we're looking for. Any observation that helps us physically define the tetrahedron will be useful to this process. So I've started the list off with two ideas. The tetrahedron contains four equilateral triangles. Again, you can see that here as I rotate this. I know I have to go very slowly for the webcam to pick it up, but you can see that there are actually four faces. Okay. And the tetrahedron, the four equilateral triangles that together enclose a space. It's a very important attribute. And secondly, the tetrahedron contains four vertices, four faces, and six edges. So that's the kickoff. Now let's get some further observations. What other physical attributes do you see? BL, do we have any takers yet?
Well, Vera had her hand up, and then she took it down. Vera, did you have a suggestion?
No, but, yeah, because it's, Francis already has said it. I said it contains a space, yeah.
Oh, that's good. Okay, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Terry, hello. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Glad to have you join us.
Yeah. There's 5 points.
It's 5 points. And where's the fifth?
Top.
Okay. Well, actually, the figure is four-pointed, but interestingly enough, the central point of the entire figure, which stands at the very center, is a kind of fifth point, and we'll be bringing that out later. But if you see, Terry, that what you're looking at here actually is a triangle that is then extended upward to an upper point. Now, this figure on your screen now shows it. The triangle that you see at the base there. You know, that line that you can kind of see through the figure to see that line that's going horizontally, that represents the base of this figure. And let me hold this up again. And then you have the point at the top rising up above that. And so we just have 4 points. So look, you see, one is pointing towards you now. There's the second. There's the third. And I don't know which ones I've shown you. And there's the fourth. So anyway, thank you, Terry. Anyone else?
Go ahead, Scott.
Just as the three vertices of the equilateral triangle in a two-dimensional field are equidistant from each other, here in three-dimensional field, all four vertices are equidistant from each other, which is unique.
Thank you. Yes, it's absolutely true. It is, the only three-dimensional figure that where the characteristic that Scott just described, which is that each point is precisely equidistant and equiangular. That means has the same angle in relationship to the other 3 points. And we're going to be making a whole lot out of that in just a little bit. So thanks for introducing that point. Any other ideas? And now, if you don't have a headset, type in your thoughts, because I know we have a lot of brilliant people out there with no headsets. So jump in there and type in your thoughts. Brett, can you find that distortion and mute that, please? There, thank you. So any more thoughts about the tetrahedron? Its physical attributes.
Yeah, Luke. Luca had
Hello.
Something.
Hi, Luca.
I'm having a little problems in expressing myself geometrically, but there are
not a problem. You're among friends, so just go for it.
Second, there are two spheres within it. One is within, and one is touching the vertices.
Yeah. Very well put. I didn't hear any problem there at all. Thank you. Yes, I'm going to be talking about that in a moment. Yes, there are two spheres. If you understand what Luke's talking about, I'll be illustrating it in a moment. But one is completely inside the tetrahedron. That is to say, technically speaking, that it's the surface of the sphere touches the midpoint of each of the triangular faces. And the other sphere is just the opposite. It completely encircles the tetrahedron. And and therefore, the tetrahedron lies entirely inside of it. So thank you for that, Luca. Yes. Okay, we're doing really well. Anything else that you can
yes,
see?
Yes, we've got a couple more and a couple of comments, but let's go to Iris.
Mm-hmm. Iris?
Hello, Francis and everyone.
Hey, Iris. Oh, hi.
Hi. This may be it's very similar to what Scott was saying, and it's very obvious again, but the lines or the edges are of equal length, all of them.
Right, exactly. Yes, that's what makes it a unique figure. Thank you for that. See, the lines of an equilateral triangle are of the same length, right? And what we're looking at here is 4 equilateral triangles, right, that have come together. So therefore, the lines would all the 6 edges, as they're called, are equal length. Thank you. Other comments?
Let me see. We had one here from Constance. The figure would be the same regardless of which face is the base. It would not change if rotated onto any other face.
Absolutely right. That's absolutely correct. And that also is a, it's not a unique attribute of any Platonic solid, because you'll find this is one of the qualities of the platonic solids in general, but it is certainly an important aspect of the tetrahedron. Right, thank you. And these, and start thinking as, you know, as we're listing these physical concepts, physical attributes, start thinking about their relationship to meaning and significance. Okay, what could that mean that, for instance, that it always appears the same, no matter which base is, which face is used as the base. For now, we're still going to be just listing our physical attributes, but consider that as each of these points is brought forward. Okay, who else has an idea or a...
Luca added perfect symmetry. Let me see. Mm-hmm. Helen says each point is the combination of three lines creating four faces, three into four.
Yes, indeed. That's right. Yeah. So what she's saying, and let me hold up the... I'm sorry, who said that?
Helen.
Thank you, Helen. So if you can see on your screen that the point that's facing you has three lines emanating from it, right? That in their termination create this equilateral triangle. Good point, so to speak. Any other ideas?
Simon says the dual of the tetrahedron is a tetrahedron.
Well, we always do what Simon says. Yeah, we're going to get there too. Thank you, Simon. I'll be introducing the concept of the dual in just a moment. Thank you for that.
Okay, I think we have another comment from Vera.
Vera.
Yes. From the top point of the tetrahedron, when the line is dropped vertically down, then it always creates the absolute center point of the bottom triangle, of the base triangle.
That's absolutely correct, yes.
And
that's mutually true for all three top points and... that's not right. It's mutually true for all four vertices and their opposite triangular face. Thank you, Vera. Yes. Other thoughts? Guys are depleting my list, which I just absolutely love. That's terrific.
Constance had her hand raised. So, Constance, do you have another comment?
Would that be called a constant
comment? Her hand went down, and I don't hear from her. No.
Okay. Constance, are you there?
No. She says no, she doesn't have any other comments.
Okay,
so it was just
fine.
A matter of me getting to what she had typed. Okay. I think I've gotten to all of the comments that were typed and to all the hands that were raised. So.
Okay. Well, what's going to happen now is that, for the most part, we're going to be looking at a quick review of what we just talked about. This point wasn't raised. The tetrahedron is the first and simplest of the five platonic solids. You see it up there in the upper left corner. These are paper constructions of each of the solids. This point was brought up. Tetrahedron is the only four-faced solid. And tangential... concept is that it takes four faces to make a solid. Okay, there are no three-faced solids. All the vertices of a tetrahedron are equidistant from each other. This was Scott's point. It's the only platonic solid, indeed the only geometric figure where this is so. So you see all those L equals 1, they're all the same and all equidistant from each other. Okay. Through its attributes, as well as by adding and multiplying these attributes, the tetrahedron holds within its form the numbers 3, 4, 6, 7, and 12. 3 because of the triangular face, 4 because there are four triangular faces as well as four vertices, 6 because there are six edges, 7 is 3 and 4 added together, and 12 is 3 times 4. If you're not into numerology, this may seem arbitrary, but you'll find that it actually does open the tetrahedron to interpretations in terms of medium, in terms of meaning. You'll find that these numbers are useful. Okay, the 4 vertices are equidistant from the central point of a figure. Who was it? Was it Simon that brought this up? Who was telling us about this? And the center point of each edge is equidistant from that center point. And the center point of each face is also equidistant from that central point. But these distances from that center point are different for each group. Therefore, 3 invisible spheres defined by these 3 distances to the central point enclose the tetrahedron. The sphere enclosing the vertices is called the circumsphere, which must have been the inspiration for the Mercedes-Benz emblem. The sphere that is tangential to the central point of the faces is called the N-sphere. Okay? And that point was raised. You guys did really well. Thank you. Okay. And this brings us to Terry's point, which the 5 points, the one hidden in the middle. A certain class of molecules express themselves as tetrahedrons with a central point. Methane, CH4, has 4 hydrogen atoms surrounding a central carbon atom, and ammonium, NH4, has 4 hydrogen atoms surrounding a central nitrogen atom. I would love to, even though I have, you know, this is not my forte at all, but I would love to have a discussion with an esoteric biologist or physicist or chemist I bet much light could be shed on the nature of the form world based on these molecular structures. I mean, isn't this evocative? You know, here you have, you know, the simplest possible, 4 of the simplest possible atoms surrounding the atom that is responsible, at least within the physical sciences, for life, making up this substance called methane. It's quite extraordinary. Anyway, for this reason, one of the leading journals in organic chemistry is called Tetrahedron. The tetrahedron forms what is called a triangular pyramid. This was brought up, I believe, by Vera. Excuse me if I'm not getting the names right on who brought up which point, which has the same appearance no matter which of the 4 faces is used as the base. And we can see that real simply, right? You have this, and no matter which you place down, you get the same appearance. The volume of a tetrahedron is the least amount of volume enclosed by any solid in relation to the area of its outer surface, making it, this is very much connected, the strongest of all the solids. Don't worry about these numbers. I just put them there for those of you who can relate to them. The greatest volume in relation to the area or outer surface is enclosed by a sphere. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to get into any heavy math with you, and I promise you I never will. All solids have what is called a dual. I believe Simon brought this point forward, which is created by connecting the midpoint of each face. In all solids except the tetrahedron, the dual thus created is an altogether different object. For instance, the dual of a cube is an octahedron, which is what you see there in the middle of the cube. See how the vertices of the octahedron touch the midpoints of the faces of the cube? One cool quality of the dual is that it is reciprocal. So the dual of an octahedron is a cube, as you can see here. So they nest. If you could keep going right on in, and they would nest and right out. Okay. Not so with the tetrahedron. which is the only solid whose dual is itself. When we connect the midpoint of each triangle to one another in a tetrahedron, we get another tetrahedron. And you might want to keep this in mind when we move into our subjective analysis of this figure. You know, it's very suggestive, isn't it? And it's worth taking another look at the orthogonal or 2D views of the tetrahedron, which reminds us that this figure has both a three and a fourfold physical nature. Like all the Platonic solids, the tetrahedron can be formed from a single plane represented by a sheet of paper. These blueprints are called nets. This one has tabs for gluing. If any of you are interested in building your own tetrahedron, you can build a net using this figure in a few moments, using a compass and a straight edge, or just use your comments box and ask me for a copy of this net, and I'll email you a PDF. Then you just print it out, cut it out, and it's quite satisfying to make these figures. By the way, I always read all your comments, so it doesn't have to go through BL to get to me. If you type a comment in your box, I will be reading it later. So, you know, please feel free to make any suggestions or comments that you would like. So once you get your net, just fold along the lines and glue the tabs on the inside, and you'll get something like this. This was built using this net, as was the figure that I've been showing you. Okay, the point of this physical analysis is to stimulate our imaginations so that we might discover meaning and significance in this figure's physical attributes. With that in mind, let's move to the next phase of our analysis. Could we get a reader to tell us what we're going to do next?
Volunteers, raise your hand, please.
If you've already read, that's perfectly fine.
Okay, go ahead, Helen.
Okay. Conceptually, this involves arriving at its underlying idea, which may be expressed in its name, and its meanings as that emerges in the consciousness through meditation, and at its significance as a whole or in part. You should, when doing this, bear in mind that the idea connotes the higher or abstract intent, that the meaning is that intent expressed in terms of the concrete mind, and that its significance has in it more of an emotional quality and might be expressed as a type of desire it arouses in you.
Thank you very much, Helen. Yes, it's odd to think of, you know, desire connected with the meaning of a tetrahedron, but it does stimulate the emotional plane, the concept of significance. Because DK ascribes meaning to the concrete mind and significance to the emotional realm. So, considering our list of physical attributes, what meaning or significance can we ascribe to the tetrahedron? As an example, here's a couple of related attributes. The use of the triangle to represent the sacred is found in practically all spiritual disciplines. We could hypothesize, given what we now know, that the tetrahedron is to the third dimension what the triangle is to the second. And I'm speaking there of its spiritual nature, right? The second point is, because a tetrahedron is made up of four three-sided faces, we have a unique demonstration of the integral relationship between three and four, between the sacred and the form realm. So, any further ideas? Now, I know this is a tough one, but this is really where the rubber hits the road in finding the meaning and significance in these figures. As you're thinking about this, keep in mind the list of physical attributes. So, do we have any brave souls that would like to step forward and hypothesize as to the meaning or significance of this figure?
Yes, we have several.
Awesome.
And the list is growing. Malia says aspiration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Simon says the cross section is one example. One example is in the planet's three great centers of Shambhala, the hierarchy in humanity, just to mention one aspect.
Okay. Could you read that again?
Sure. I was actually going to let Simon, you're on self-mute, but can you explain to Francis, please?
Intriguing idea. Could you just say it again for me, please?
You're on self-mute. You're going to have to unmute yourself. Okay, well, I still show he's self-muted, so let me read it to you again. The cross-section is one example is in the planet's three great centers of Shambhala. Here he's unmuted. Go ahead, please, Simon.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, Francis. Hi. Earlier you showed a wonderful drawing in two-dimensional of an outer circle, the equilateral triangle, and the in-sphere, or the inner circle.
Yes, right.
So in one of the books,
it's way back here. It's coming up though. There it is.
There it is.
Great. Okay.
This is very similar to one of the drawings in the books with a dot in the center, the circle, the triangle, and the outer circle representing the eventual perfection of the three planetary centers coming into alignment.
And which three are you thinking of? The three planetary
centers? The center dot would be Shambhala. The triangle would be hierarchy, and the outer circle would be humanity when it's perfected.
That's really nice. Thank you for that. I like that a lot. So close your eyes while I fast forward back through these. Here we go. Bam, boom. Here we are. All right. I think I just caught up. Okay. Yes, I like that a lot. And it's interesting because it uses something that's not physically evident, right, which is the three spheres that are related to this tetrahedron, right? The in-sphere, the circumsphere, and then another sphere, which is the one that is tangential to the middle point of the edges of each of the four edges, which gives you that middle sphere. Thank you for that, Simon. Other ideas? Yes?
Martin, please go ahead.
Yes, I was going to speak about the spheres, particularly the one that created from the vertices and the one created from the faces.
Mm-hmm.
What comes to mind is that's four and four, and that comes to mind as the four lower ethers and the five higher ethers. And one would probably be the higher. And the faces giving light, space to manifestation, so to speak, would be the other. And the entire process of substitution of the physical ethers by Bodhi and the higher ethers through the process of initiation is applied. So it's a very powerful symbol.
Yes. So would you, you were cutting in and out there, but I think I got the gist of what you were saying. So the higher ethers would be represented by which sphere?
Touches the vertices. Closes the tetrahedron, and the one that the tetrahedron encloses would be the lower ethers.
Yes, right.
Greater, the lesser, they're exactly the same thing. There's no distance between them, no difference between them in terms of principle. The sphere is the perfect form. The all etheric forms are whether they are physical ethers or cosmic ethers.
Yes, so they're absolutely related, yes. Thank you for that. Now, I want I want to point out something here that just happened between the last two speakers, right? We had the first illustration using the three spheres use the outer sphere, the circumsphere, as that which represented humanity, and then going all the way in to the central point in Shambhala. And the concept just brought forward here was just the opposite, right? So which one is right? Well, that's the beauty of sacred geometry, is there is, it is a template that can be used in many different ways. There is no right interpretation of the tetrahedron, though there are those that will tend to resonate more strongly than others. Both of those concepts are absolutely worthy of the use of the tetrahedron. Thank you both for the explication of the use of these enclosing spheres. Other thoughts?
We have several other thoughts, but I want to point this out because I think it's right on point to what Martin just brought up and what you just said. And this is from Walter. It says, the tetrahedron is a type of pyramid and is the only Platonic solid that when placed with one face down, a single point instead of another face is at the top. Therefore, the tetrahedron represents the one expanding into the many, or the many evolving into the one.
Oh, that's really brilliant. That's something that I hadn't considered at all. Thank you so much for that. That's really terrific, Walter. Thank you.
Okay, now let me get back to the list of other individuals, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we got quite a few here. Okay, Vera, go ahead, please.
Yeah, slightly similar. That the top point reminds me the reading I happened to read about from the atomic plane, the intention, the creation go down into manifestation, so that from that one point intention it goes down through the, all the layers, and all those levels has the same blueprint, that triangle. Yeah, that's
Yes, so it carries the intent of the one and down into the four,
into deeper and deeper.
In this way you can see it almost as a method or a tool for manifestation.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Great. Other thoughts?
Go ahead, please, Scott.
I may be jumping the gun here, but I'm sure what you'll get to is a triangular prism with a four-sided base. But it was already mentioned that this is a form or a shape that reminds one of fire. And that's the element that's associated with the tetrahedron.
That's correct, yes.
And the triangular pyramid, which in its name, pyr, means fire.
Mm. Yes, thank you for that. Yes. Yeah, the tetrahedron is related to fire in just a little bit. We'll be going deeper into that concept. Thanks for bringing that forward. Other ideas? Any more?
Yes, go ahead, please, Luca.
Yes, when the spirit tries to create something with the matter, I think that perhaps tetrahedron could be the first form that is created. That is the line
certain
of the least resistance for the form to, that is the core of the form, of any form that is being created.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you have mentioned the simplest molecules that basically are at the core of life. They are in the form of tetrahedron.
Mm.
Or
yes.
if you look at, let's say, how life begins in the womb, it also begins in a way with the tetrahedron.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the simplest and the most pure form that begins at the beginning of the creation, along which everything else is then glued upon, if I can say.
I get your intent. Thank you. Yeah, it's a kind of path of least resistance for the creation of form. And, you know, if you imagine, now this is jumping ahead, and I'll be covering this in future webinars, but if you were to extend this tetrahedron, you would find that through numerical relationship that it finds its way into the realm of the cube. But I'm not gonna say any more about that just now. Any other thoughts?
Yes, we've got one more comment from Helen. The stability and versatility of its characteristics make it an effective tool pattern for bridge building.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. Also, it's the literal bridge building. It's the strongest figure, and you will often see clustered tetrahedrons in literal physical building because it's so incredibly strong. But I get a sense that you were speaking also in the realm of the noumenal, or the realm of the idea. Thank you. Yes. Other ideas?
Yes, we've got another comment from Asha. Wondering, are you saying that the tetrahedron is the first in manifestation form and the sphere is the most compact? Please, can you repeat what you said about volume of sphere versus the tetrahedron? And thank you.
Let me rush back up there.
Thoughts.
Yeah, we're right here. What this means is that if you take a form that encloses space, right, the least amount of space in relation to the outer surface of the object is in the tetrahedron. So it encloses the least amount of actual space for the surface volume, and that the sphere is at the other end of the spectrum, enclosing the most amount of space for the in relation to the surface of the sphere. So yeah, certainly, you know, rather than worrying about these numbers or even about this idea of space, think in terms of the opposition of these two forms. How are they in relationship to each other based on this one concept? Let's see, and then the other part of your question had to do with, were we saying that it's the first form that in the form world, that goes into the form world? Dwal Kool doesn't speak of the tetrahedron. He only speaks of triangles and spheres. So what we're doing here is basically hypothesizing the possibility that it could be, because it does represent a path of least resistance. You know, the triangle only has to extend itself in one direction and represented by one additional point for it to breach the divide between the formless and the form world. I hope that helps answer your question. Let me get back up here. All right. Okay. All right. Here we are. Okay. Do we have any other thoughts before
we
move on?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
They're getting here faster than I can. Okay. The three of spirit, in entering the three-dimension form realm, has no choice but to become a four, that being the minimum number of faces and points for solid appearance. I'm sorry, this is from Gabriella.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thanks, Gabrielle. That's very well said. Yes, and that actually might help to answer. Who was it that just asked the question before? Sorry.
Asha.
Asha, yes. That might help answer Asha's question. Yes, it's certainly a natural path. You know, is this the way the Deva builders actually work? Well, we don't know, but it's a very likely path of least resistance. Other thoughts? Okay. That was fantastic, guys. That's really stepped up to the plate. I appreciate it. Now, to get a better understanding of this figure, let's again engage in a simple visualization, like we do with the triangle and the square. Imagine our group, our little webinar group here, as one of the four vertices of a tetrahedron. It could be any point, but to keep us working together, let's choose the point at the apex. Compared to the triangle, where we were the synthesizing point for one pair of opposites, the line opposite us, right, in a triangle, the line opposite us, now we are synthesizing three pairs of opposites because there are three lines opposite us. Furthermore, those three pairs make up an equilateral triangle that stands directly opposite us, making up the base of the figure. We are, in fact, this opposite triangle's central point, which was brought out in our discussion, extended upwards. As in a single triangle, all the other vertices share this same perspective and are thus each points of synthesis for the triangle that stands opposite them. In this, the tetrahedron is unique, for in no other 3D figure do all the vertices share an identical perspective. Let's accept for a moment the premise that the equilateral triangle represents the sacred. Now, if we imagine ourselves as one of the vertices of a tetrahedron, right? So it would be the point facing towards you, okay? And that's what I'm attempting to illustrate here, that you're looking, in a sense, down on the point, and down on the tetrahedron, and it's this point. That way you can see beyond it to the equilateral triangle. So if we imagine ourselves as one of the vertices of a tetrahedron, what we see in the equilateral triangle precisely centered before us is a vision of sacred reality. What's more, every other point is having the same vision simultaneously. And we are a part of their vision just as they are a part of ours. Thus, the boundary between I and thou disappears, and we move from the God transcendent of the triangle to God immanent, the one life that pervades us all. Why? Because we are onlookers at the same time that we are part of the sacred triangle. So though this shared perspective of both onlooker and identity with the sacred is fairly easy to understand conceptually, it takes an expansion of consciousness to simultaneously experience all points of the tetrahedron as both onlooker and sacred. Okay, now let's bring in the figure we analyzed last month. In what ways is the tetrahedron similar to either of these figures? Which of these is the tetrahedron most similar to? Any thoughts? For those of you who were here last month, where we developed the idea of the three overshadowing the four, or spirit overshadowing form, and we use the concept of the empress, the third arcanum of the Tarot, and the emperor, the fourth arcanum, to illustrate this idea. So how does the tetrahedron relate to these figures? Any ideas? BL, do we have any takers on this
No takers yet. Come on, guys, raise your hand.
Well, the brilliance that you've been showing in your
Here we go.
Otherware. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, please, Walter.
Yes, both the figures below the tetrahedron have the triangle inside the square, and so definitely that's strongly related to the tetrahedron, because since the tetrahedron both has a 3 and the 4 in it, both of the images represent those qualities of the tetrahedron in two-dimensional form, both the spiritual and the material.
Yes, they both have 3 and 4 inherent in their nature, don't they? Yes, thank you. That's quite true. Any other thoughts?
Go ahead, Scott,
okay.
Please.
Yeah.
The figure on the left is a Masonic apron. It can be seen as that. It can be seen as an involutionary with the triangle coming into form, and the fire rising in the right figure is evolutionary, aspirational, perhaps.
Mm. Yes.
You could do that pairing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and how does that, how do the two separately or together relate to the tetrahedron?
Well, the one on the right looks more like a tetrahedron.
Mm-hmm. But you could turn the tetrahedron over. You know, you could even say that the tetrahedron, in a sense, embodies both those concepts, right? The involutional and evolutional, and the figure does too, because after all, the figure is just turned over. But there's something inherent in the tetrahedron that holds both of these concepts within it, that is separate, other than the way these figures do. Other thoughts, Scott, on that?
You're talking about the fact that it has four faces and four vertices and a triangular shape to the faces.
Yeah, and it gets to one of the very important differences, which is the absence of the manifested square, right?
True.
Fourness in the tetrahedron is implied. It's not by the square bounding box of the ones below, but strictly by the number of triangles that make up the form. So the square is sublimated, or fourness, we could say, is somewhat sublimated.
It hasn't come into form yet. It's theoretical in the tetrahedron, and when it moves into the combination of the square and triangle, you actually have it in form, visible.
Yes. Yeah, it's certainly the most etheric of all 3D forms in that sense. So much so, what you're suggesting, I hear, is that it's actually in the realm of idea rather than physical form. Yeah. And that goes well with the fire, and what we'll be talking about a little bit, about the idea of it representing, the upper three subplanes of the mental plane is one possible use of it. But that's getting a little bit ahead, something we're good at. So any other ideas about the relationship between these, the two forms on the bottom and the tetrahedron?
Go ahead, Terry.
It's the one at the top, a tetrahedron, it's meant to be.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, I see. I was going to say it's very similar to the tetrahedron in a number of key respects, but it is a tetrahedron.
That's it, yes, Terry. You see, it's actually this figure, and that dotted line is actually means that you're seeing through it.
Yes, I see now, yes.
You know,
right.
It's like glass, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Fine. Okay. Any other ideas about the relationship between these forms?
Constance says both have six edges.
Right on. That's right. They both have six edges. And that kind of thing is very significant. It's inherent in the nature of three becoming four. One edge is lost. It's quite fascinating. And what is that edge? The seventh. And the seventh is often that which is not manifest. Yeah. Great. Thanks for bringing that forward. Other ideas? Any more connected with this?
Simon says all the lengths are equal.
Yes, that's true. If you were to swing one of those equilateral triangle edges on at the bottom, like say the bottom left one down to the left, it would be the same length as the edge of the square. Thank you, Simon. Yes. Okay. Any others?
Let me see. Gabriel says the 2D drawings at the bottom are indications of 3 and 4, while the tetrahedron is the demonstration of this.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yes. And that brings up a really obvious point, which is the tetrahedron is a three-dimensional object, right? And the other two figures are, because they're two-dimensional, in relation to the third dimension, they act as blueprints. Yes. Okay, other ideas?
I think Constance has a comment. Go ahead, please, Constance.
You'll have to unmute yourself.
Yeah, I'm not getting any sound there, so maybe it was just the question that I had already. Yeah, I think it was just the question that we already addressed. So, okay, here we go. Trudy, please go ahead.
If you add two tetrahedrons together, you get a square. Is that right?
Not quite. Two equilateral, you have a four-sided figure, but two equilateral triangles back-to-back create a diamond-shaped form that fits within the ellipse of the Vesco pieces. That's not a square, but it's very strongly related to the square. So it's, in a sense, it's a fine point. If you were to put these equilateral triangles that you see on the bottom together, you can see that because the angles of an equilateral triangle are 60 degrees, and the angles of two triangles that would make up a square would be 45 and 90.
Okay.
So that's nonetheless, it's as you can see when we were looking at the genesis of a tetrahedron, that it's the down-pointing triangle, and therefore that four-sided diamond-shaped figure that leads to the tetrahedron. Other thoughts, comments on this? Okay. So we have a manifested fourfold expression of spirit. And because it exists in three dimensions, you could call it a spirit-infused vehicle, right? The fourness allows it to be a vehicle. But the nature of the four equilateral triangles infuses it with spirit. Wouldn't you agree? That was hypothetical. A rhetorical question. Okay, so if we take this definition of a tetrahedron as a hypothesis, in terms of its meaning, which is that it's a spirit-infused vehicle, what might this figure represent? Let me give you an idea of what I mean. It could represent a meditating figure, for instance, right? Which fulfills the hypothesis. The triangular base could represent the lower chakras, the three ascending faces, the heart, throat, and head chakras. The main point being that it's spirit manifesting through form. Okay? So given this broad parameter of spirit manifesting through form, what are some other ideas, examples of what the tetrahedron might represent? Any thoughts?
I have one. I'm not sure if it's from earlier or not, but it seems appropriate here too. If you draw a line from the interior apex of the triangles to each of the other two corners, you create a perspective view of a four-sided base pyramid. This is from Malia.
Okay, that's, thank you for that. Yes. Yes, yeah, I see that. Yeah, that's that would actually be a quality of the physical attributes of the tetrahedron. Mm-hmm. And it's also shows up in that square with the cross orthogonal view of the tetrahedron. Okay, other ideas?
Hi, Francis. It's Eva.
Hi, Eva. Thanks for joining us.
I was thinking of the various interpretations one can have with respect to the idea of the triangle. And since there are four triangles, my mind was thinking, okay, so how do we look at the idea of a triangle and what it represents four different ways? Mm-hmm. Well, the first way I thought of was it can represent, a triangle can represent the three aspects of deity, right? The first, the second, the third.
Right.
The triangle can represent the three parts or the three vehicles of the personality. So we've got the physical, etheric, the emotional, the mental.
Right.
A triangle can represent the threeness of who we are, personality, soul, and spirit, or monad.
Mm.
The triangle can represent the ashram, the spiritual triad,
mm-hmm.
and the soul, you know, the causal body, the soul. So we can play with this in any way, but I just thought that the fourness is, you know, the city square, which represents
mm-hmm.
Humanity or represents the personality, and then all the triplicities that we can, that at least my mind is going to. Anyway, that was just
yes.
one of.
Yes, thank you for that. It really broadens out the possibilities, doesn't it? It's all these triplicities that Eva, who by the way is my boss.
Co-worker, that's it.
Co-worker and section leader. We have a picture of her on our altar, and you know, anyway. yes, all these triplicities find form, find a means of manifesting in form, and which is the nature of the. It's that very special nature of the tetrahedron that allows the triangular concept, any one of the triplicities that Eva just described, to take form, right? And so, you know, we could go right down the list of what she described and imagine, you know, how these are taking form. One very clear one is just, and this is part of the intrinsic nature of the sevenness of this. It's not just three added to four makes seven. It's that the top three subplanes manifest through the bottom four, right? It's the lower quaternary and the triplicity that is the sacred guiding principles of that lower quaternary. That's the intrinsic nature of the tetrahedron, right? It's all seven in that sense, right? It's those higher three manifesting in the lower four, in a sense, in their most righteous capacity, right? It, because it's a very sacred symbol we've come to see. Thank you, Eva. Any other thoughts?
Yes, we have several.
Okay.
Here. Go ahead, please, Terry.
I was just going to say, well, I think you pointed out really that the tetrahedron provides a good demonstration of the relationship between the centers, seven centers in a human being.
Yes.
And you can see, for example, how the heart has enormous influence over the lower self or will to eventually, as well as an influence on the higher self. brings that out very nicely.
Yes, thank you. Yes. Yeah, the seven centers, the three higher and the four lower, again, represented by the tetrahedron. Thank you, Terry. Other thoughts?
Okay, let me read you a couple of comments that we have from Simon. It's symbolic of the soul-infused personality.
Yes.
And from Asha, it can represent ascension when pointing upwards and precipitation involution when pointing downward. So the overlapping six-pointed star is spirit embedded in matter, i.e. the soul. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. And there's actually a very specific geometrical figure called a Merkaba star that is made up of two interpenetrated tetrahedrons pointing in opposite directions. That's that will be a subject for another webinar. And we actually have a new faculty member, and I can't tell you her name, who is her entire spiritual approach is based on the Merkaba. So yes, you're right in that. It's a kind of form-based six-pointed star, isn't it? But we have eight instead of six, which is also connected with the Christ principle. But I'll save any more comments about that for a future webinar, because it takes us into another area in some ways. Here we just want to identify these fundamental structures. Okay, other thoughts?
Yes, Martin has something, and I want to tell you that it is your 15-minute warning. Go ahead, please, Martin.
I'm looking at the clock.
I'm back at the spheres concept of the two ethers, and the idea of four being the mediator between the higher three and the lower three. As in this image here, the heart is the mediator between the three chakras that are above and the three below. But basically, the Buddhic plane is the mediator between the three higher levels and the three below, and the Buddhic plane is the plane of the chakras of the planetary logoi, and the Buddhic the lower ether is the plane of the chakras, or the wheels of energy in the physical world that we're looking at in this image here. So the fourth plane and the idea of the ethers, both high and low, is very implied. As you say, it's not visible in the demonstrated tetrahedron. It's what contains it, both the fourness, in essence, contains the three in all of its manifestation. And that's the mediating principle contains the three.
Yes. And the, you know, the Buddhic plane is described in one of DK's commentaries as the goal of humanity at this time. You know, in the last webinar, we talked about how four is such a dominant influence on our planet, and even on the solar system. You know, we're in the fourth globe, fifth subrace. But other than that, it's just lines up fourth globe, fourth chain, right? It's a profoundly four-based reality, and therefore it's not by accident that the midway point is called the plane of release. And I share your idea that the tetrahedron is very connected to the Buddhic plane. It's inherent, because that's really where the three and the four come together. It's the plane of unity, after all. Let me share with you some other ideas I have. Just to open it up, you're welcome to continue to contribute ideas on this. I'll throw in a couple in the meantime. So keeping in mind our primary definition, which is spirit-infused vehicle. It could even be used, the tetrahedron could be used to represent the seventh root race of humanity, right? Again, the culmination of the three and the four, right? Absolutely, four plus three equals seven. With its relative perfection and completion represented by the four triangles, also four times three equals 12, which is a number of cyclic completion. Or it could simply stand for any overshadowed incarnation, such as the Christ overshadowing Jesus, right? The form being carried by the fourness and the absolute expression of the figure moving down and through the form and represented by the four equilateral triangles. This is another artist's idea of overshadowing, right? And referencing last month's discussion, we could hypothesize that the tetrahedron represents the divine hermaphrodite, a further stage in the union of three and four, represented in the Tarot by the marriage of the empress and emperor. Since the tetrahedron is sometimes used as a symbol for fire, it could be used to represent the fiery subplanes of the higher mental plane, where every disciple must build his or her causal body. So this is that subplane, including the fourth subplane of the mental. The base of the tetrahedron could represent the fourth subplane, the midway point, with the three up-pointing sides of the figure representing the higher three etheric subplanes of the mental plane. It's interesting to look at the senses corresponding to these four subplanes. From the fourth subplane upwards, you have discrimination, which forms the base of the tetrahedron. Then spiritual discernment, response to group vibration, and spiritual telepathy forming the three sides, which it makes an undeniably potent spiritual unit, right? Which leads us to this. The tetrahedron could be a representation of the causal body, couldn't it? Because it is a form, but it's the highest form that we know of. And the causal body is the highest form that we can build as personalities aspiring for soul infusement. Okay.
Francis?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Victor has a comment.
Yeah, Victor.
Hi there.
Hey, Victor.
During a meditation a number of years ago, I was brought to an idea of energy and the primary forces in behind energy. I can use the example to paint a picture if I use forces instead of energy. Mm-hmm. The force that you see in an explosion, I relate that to say like first ray energy or an outgoing energy. An implosion, which is the reverse, is a like the second ray, or the energy collapsing to a point. And I got the idea that neither one of these supports life. Mm-hmm. The divine thing that causes or enables life to exist is divine intelligence, that being something that would cause these forces, one opposing the other, to balance. Mm. Okay, so that gave me the idea of rotation. Well, now, if you think about it, just rotation, if you follow the circumference of that point on that circumference line, the forces on that point are constantly changing. And so I thought, well, the right word then is change. So you have like an outgoing energy, an ingoing energy, and change. Mm-hmm. Now, if you take change in mathematics, the symbol for change is a delta triangle. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you take these three primary energies, they exist all the time. Not one can stand by its own. They all three have to exist at the very same instant. None can exist without the other. Okay, mm-hmm. That three, if you rotate that through space, that creates form. But if you rotate it through space, what you have is a spinning tetrahedron.
Yes, that's very nicely described. Thank you. Yes, it's another triplicity in manifestation, which is the natural balancing nature of the three aspects represented by the first, second, and third ray. Yeah, we're not going to have time in this webinar. I'm literally halfway through my content at this point. We will actually be looking at related concept to this. So thank you, Victor. That's quite profound. Thank you.
And you have another comment by Asha. If you collapse the idea of the overshadowing, as in that diagram in time-space, then you would get the threefold flame in the heart as spiritual singularity, the place of creation in the heart, infinity within and without. Place of manifestation as well as inward infinity like black holes. Spiritual singularity for each person like an individual Big Bang for each microcosm being.
Yes, it really gets back to the idea of God transcendent and God immanent, right? The triangle tends to suggest something standing outside of ourselves because it's the threefold nature of deity. But in the tetrahedron, we're able to participate, I mean, literally, right, to bring this back up, as an onlooker of the three aspects of deity. But as I developed before, the fact that every point is also an onlooker and a participant in deity brings it from God transcendent to God immanent. Yes, thank you for that, Asha. Okay. However applied, the tetrahedron could be seen as a further, if not culminating, evolutionary stage of the figures we analyzed last month, right? Okay. Now, I think, and this is going to be the culminating exercise for today's webinar, let's tackle DK's third phase in the contemplation of a symbol. Can we get a reader to read this brief passage?
Hands up, please. Volunteers. There we go. Thank you. Walter, please go ahead.
Yes, point C. Esoterically, this would cover the effect of the force or energy upon you and of the quality of the vibration it may arouse in you, perhaps in some center, perhaps in your astral body, or perhaps only in your mind. From Glamour, a World Problem.
Thank you, Walter. Great. So, having familiarized ourselves with the tetrahedron, let's seize the moment and reflect on where in ourselves it affects us. Keep in mind as you visualize that symbols and geometric figures, rather than being descriptions of potencies, are inherently potent. After all, that's why we're here, isn't it? Thus, they have the potential to penetrate your consciousness and reveal something that can't be stated in words. So we'll take exactly 1 minute for this meditation, beginning now. Okay. All right. I'm going to have to escape. Go down here to the bottom. And
you have a couple questions here.
Okay, I'll take those questions as I'm setting up for our finish here.
Okay. Simon, is there time to discuss what initiation the tetrahedron relates to, or if it relates to an initiation, and if so, does anyone have any ideas? And Malia has a couple of comments. Rain cloud of knowable things and abstract mind. I think that was in relation to the meditation.
Yes, thank you. It is. We are out of time. We're at an hour and 31 minutes now. So we hopefully can pick up on that in the next webinar. And it's a provocative question. And I tell you what, I'll touch on it when in discussing the fourth initiation, which in our survey of the number four will certainly be an important question to look at. So we just finished our second entire webinar on the number four, and it looks like we're going to have an entire third webinar on the number four, which I just love it. It's terrific. You know, maybe we'll get to number 10 in like 3 years or something, you know. I hope you've enjoyed today's webinar. Next month, we'll, I say optimistically, complete our survey of the number four, but in fact, I have no idea if we'll do that. It doesn't matter. We'll take a closer look at the fourth ray, as well as the Sephiroth called Chesed in the Tree of Life. And what you're going to find when, in the whole purpose of looking at all these ways of considering number is that they support each other. You'll find that in these various philosophies, for instance, in the philosophy of the Tree of Life, much of what we've discussed is said in another way. We'll also look at how for manifest and temple construction, astrology, that's an easy webinar in itself, and many other topics, he says optimistically. Who knows, I say, we might even get into the realm of number five. I don't think so. I think we're going to be one more entire webinar in the number four. So we've got a new reading list this month, all new items. You can read ahead if you would like, or you can wait a month if you prefer to read the chapters in both Key to the Universe and A Beginner's Guide to Constructing the Universe on the number five. But at any rate, if you can put your hands on Robert Lawler's wonderful book simply titled Sacred Geometry, and by the way, you can find this online. I've actually pulled it up in PDF and have been able to view this online. It's only about a 100-page book, but it is jam-packed with fabulous material. He describes in this the laws of proliferation through procreation by means of the square and its allied transrational function, the square root of 2, which is also something we're going to be covering in our segment on the number four. So if you're up for those 7 pages in sacred geometry, take a look at that. And let's see. I'd like to close with an old commentary that details the process of transmutation, which Dhu'al Kul defines as the passage from one state of being to another through the agency of fire. So you can see its relevance to the tetrahedron. He recommends meditating on the following 3 stages. So I'm going to ask for a couple of readers here. I'll read the first, and then, actually, no, let's... Yeah, I'll read the first one, and then if we could get three readers to read the next three levels, that would be terrific. So, in fact, I'm going to reverse that. I'm going to have the three readers read the first three, and then I'll sum it up with a conclusion. So let's go ahead and pick out those three readers now. It's fine for three who have spoken already that would like to intone this meditation for us.
Asha, go ahead, please.
He who transfers the Father's life.
Hang on, wait a minute, Asha. Before you actually start reading, could we get the two other readers all set up so we can just move seamlessly from one to the next without asking for you?
Okay, Scott for number two, and okay. Anita number three. Walter for number three. Oops.
Okay, terrific. So now as they appear on your screen, just the reader, volunteer readers just jump in there, starting.
And Asha, you need to talk a little louder, please.
Okay, Asha, take it away.
He who transfers the Father's life to the lower three seeketh the agency of fire hid in the heart of Mother. He worketh with the Agni Chetans that hide, that burn, and thus produce the needed moisture.
He who transfers the life from out the lower three into the ready fourth seeketh the agency of fire hid in the heart of Brahma. He worketh with the forces of the Agnishvatas that emanate, that blend, and thus produce the needed warmth.
He who transfers the life into the gathering fifth seeketh the agency of fire hid in the heart of Vishnu. He worketh with the forces of the Agni Suryans that blaze, that liberate the essence, and thus produce the needed radiance.
First moisture, slow and all-enveloping, then heat with ever-growing warmth and fierce intensity, then force that presses, drives, and concentrates. Thus is radiance produced, thus the exudation. Thus mutation, thus change of form. Finally, liberation, escape of the volatile essence, and the gathering of the residue back to the primordial stuff. Okay, thank you, readers. All right, that's it for today. Don't forget to donate a couple of bucks to themoriafederation.com. which will help pay the yearly fee for this GoToMeeting account. Thank you, Brett, for making these webinars available on makara.us. We try to get them posted as quickly as possible. And thank you, BL, as ever. I could not do this without you. Finally, keep spreading the word about the webinar series. It's one other friend that might like it. Go find them, tell them, ask them to join us. I would love to fill this series up as we go forward. Thank you for attending, and I'll see you next time, which will be on March 15th. Okay, bye for now.